we've been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
Jets have some life.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. Road games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Evgeny Malkin and Blake Wheeler, really? Wheeler in with a right. Wheeler in with another right, and another right, and another right, and down goes Malkin. Wow.
Well, maybe it will happen. This crowd is on their feet.
And they pat each other. This one is over.
Good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. It's a Winnipeg Jets game day edition of the show. We've got the Jets and Flames coming up, 6 o'clock puck drop. You can hear that game on TSN 1290. We're going to get you ready for tonight's game. I'm Ezra Ginsberg filling in for Drew Mundell, who's still on vacation. I'm joined in studio by Sean Assor and Dave Manuk. We've got a great show for you this morning. We're going to be joined by George Johnson of CalgaryFlames.com at 9:30 to preview the game between the Flames and Jets. The Flames have won 8 in a row. They're the hottest team in the league right now. At 10 o'clock, we're going to be joined by Jordan Tutu, Chicago Blackhawks forward. We're really excited about that, to talk to Jordan and the Terrence Tutu Memorial Cup, which is going to be happening next weekend in Rankin Inlet. We're going to be joined at 10:30 by Pete Blackburn of Fox Sports. We're going to go around the NHL with Pete. And then at 11:30, there's a lot of Moose games happening this weekend. There was a game last night. Unfortunately, they lost 4-1 to the Charlotte Checkers. We're going to be joined by Mike McIntyre at 11:30 a.m. He covers the Moose and the Jets for the Free Press. Without further ado, guys, I want to get into Wednesday night's game between the Jets and the Penguins. Arguably the best first period we've seen this year at MTS Center. You had 5 goals. You had a couple of fights. You had an ejection. First off, guys, good morning. How's it going?
It's going quite well, thanks. This is different. The Saturday morning show. I'm usually Wednesday, weekday afternoon, so it's a new perspective. I like this.
Well, Sean, we appreciate you coming on.
Pop-Tarts.
Yeah, I brought some Pops. Squares. Yeah, I usually bring Timbits, but I've got some Pop-Tarts. Well, you know what? I thought I would class it up a little bit here, you know?
Nothing screams class like a Pop-Tart.
Yeah, and some Rice Krispie Squares. We got some coffee. We're all good to go. Dave, how's it going?
Good. Working furiously, trying to get the breaking Jets news up on IllegalCurve.com that Julian Melchiori has been recalled by the Winnipeg Jets.
And that voice that you just heard, of course, was Dave, and he's going to be doing color tomorrow.
Oh.
For the Manitoba Moose game with Mitch Peacock, a game that you can hear on this fine station. So, guys, that game on Wednesday night between the Penguins and the Jets, it was obviously a disappointing loss for the Jets. But let's get right into what everybody wants to talk about. The fights and then the suspension for Tom Cestito on his hit on Toby Enstrom. First of all, let's start with the fight between Blake Wheeler and Evgeny Malkin. Did you guys have any problem with that?
No, I just thought it was funny. Like, there were a lot of protests prior to the game that fight wasn't going to happen and the Jets were only interested in 2 points. And then it kind of came across as a bit of a stage fight as opposed to happening as part of, you know, the heat of the moment. But, I mean, everyone knew it was going to happen. Nobody's surprised by it. These guys don't forget things. The whole idea of taking numbers. And I understand why Blake Wheeler isn't advertising that he's going to be going after Evgeny Malkin. So, no, I didn't really have a problem with it. I mean, do you want to see two stars duking it out and potentially getting injured like we saw with Max Domi when he broke his hand? No, obviously not. But, like, you know, these guys are warriors, and it wasn't a heat of the moment sort of situation, but it was almost like, hey, let's get this out of the way and do it, and then we can play some hockey.
Yeah, you know, this topic had been brought up ad nauseum over the lead up to this game, and both guys said the right things to the respective media members, and then they get on the ice and the faceoff happens in the Jet zone, and you kind of see them look at each other. And it's funny because Malkin says Wheeler asked him prior to the faceoff, but it's funny because Wheeler is a winger, Malkin's in the middle, so he's probably like yelling into the faceoff circle, hey, you 71 hey. But good on Malkin, you know, right off the bat, drops the stick, get it over with, put it in the back of your mind, game can go on, and then the mayhem ensues.
And I agree with you guys, and it wasn't a very long fight, and everybody
Wheeler
knew it was coming.
Wheeler looked like he wanted to get a few good shots in, and then that was the end of
it. And we know, Sean, from watching Blake Wheeler now for 6 years, that he is an emotional player, right?
Yeah.
He leaves it out on the ice. So it wasn't a much of a fight, but again, they dropped the gloves. It was something that everybody expected. It's part of the game. Let's get really to what everybody was talking about, though, when that first period was over, when Toby Enstrom left the game, Tom Cestito boards him from behind. He has facial fractures. He's out indefinitely with concussion. As Dave mentioned, Julian Melchiori is going to be called up here, so most likely we're going to see Mark Stewart in the lineup tonight. So I guess what did you guys think of the NHL Department of Player Safety giving 4 games to Tom Cestito for that board?
Well, I mean, the problem is, like, who cares? Like, ultimately, they could have given him 100 games or they can give him 1 game. I mean, it's Tom Cestito. I mean, he played, his last game was November 8th, I think, or something like that. Like, he hasn't played for the Penguins in months. So it doesn't impact the Penguins roster at all. I just don't see the rationale. I mean, to be honest with you, if the NHL had teeth, then they make the comment. Like, you know, some people said, oh, because Maurice had said he wasn't brought up to dangle. And then people said, well, what's Chris Thorburn doing in the lineup? But you can say that if all you want, but the reality is Chris Thorburn's been in the Jets lineup for the majority of games. Tom Cestito hasn't. He literally was called up to provide muscle, which is ironic because I know that there's this image of the Jets as these big bruising guys, and sure, you've got guys like Dustin Byfuglien who's a big guy, and you know, but the Jets aren't exactly an overly fighty type of team. You know, I mean, they're physical, sure, sometimes, but like, we're not a team of pugilists. You know, I mean, this isn't a team that's going after guys and trying to take guys out. I like what Cestito did to Enstrom.
Does that team even exist anymore?
No, it doesn't. And that's why, again, like, I think when it's funny, it seems like when they play Pittsburgh, it's these physical battles, and folks out east think that the Jets are that team all the time. I mean, again, why do you make this move other than to do what Cestito did? Because the fact is, and why it makes very little sense to me at least, is the fact that Cestito had already fought Thorburn. So in my mind, you've already got the Wheeler and Malkin fight, which has happened, so that's, it's done with. Then you've got Thorburn and Cestito have fought, so the two heavyweights have gone. So now you know, okay, well, you've got that. Those two things are cleared and they're out of the way. You can now play hockey. And if you think about it realistically, that was the whole purpose of, in quotes, the purpose of those fights, right? Because, again, they weren't heat-of-the-moment fights. It wasn't like third period, you know, what the game's a little bit out of hand. You've got, instead, you've got two guys. I mean, again, they're essentially staged, if you will, that are really, there's latent animosity from that's coming from previous games, but not anything current. And although Cestito and Thorburn fought, I think, when Cestito was with the Flyers back in, like, 2012, but no, I just don't understand the rationale. Now, it's interesting because there was an article in the Pittsburgh Tribune, or Post-Gazette, I'm sorry, where Cestito was asked about the hit on Enstrom and whether he felt that it was deserved. And his justification was that Enstrom made eye contact with him. But it was funny because he was emphatic in his first quote saying, yeah, we made eye contact. And then later on in the article, he's like, well, I'm pretty sure he saw me. And it's like, well, it's either one or the other.
Well, it's also like, yeah, you guys made eye contact, so Toby Enstrom's not allowed to play the puck along the wall, turning his back a little bit because he sees you coming. Like, if you break down that play, first of all, Wheeler and Malkin fight. Fine. You know, the storyline has concluded. Now the big boys go at it, and fine. Tom Cestito is called up for this exact moment. You know, you're here to fight Chris Thorburn, no one else. You have served your purpose. You've spent 5 minutes posting the penalty box. You've played 1:02 total. You come out. If you watch Tom Cestito on that shift, he's goading Dustin Byfuglien the whole time. He's doing the head fake body check at him. They're trash talking one another. I bet you, I would love to ask Dustin Byfuglien what was said between the two of them. I wonder if he's like, you don't go at me, Buff? All right, watch this, or like something like that. You know, something along those lines. Like, it's just once him and Thorburn scrap, there's no reason for Tom Cestito to be running guys. You know, there's no reason at all. But there's no reason for that play to even begin to evolve.
Sean, Dave, did you guys have any problem with Pittsburgh Penguins head coach Mike Sullivan dressing Tom Cestito in the first place? And should he have any responsibility for what happened on the ice with Toby Enstrom? A lot of people were pointing the finger at Mike Sullivan in the first place for even including Tom Cestito in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I get, look, It's a tough one because the question becomes – I don't have so much of a problem with it because you want him to be there so the Jets aren't taking – like you don't have Chris Thorburn taking a run at you know, Sidney Crosby or Evgeny Malkin. So you do – I don't necessarily have a problem with it per se. But again, my feeling is like as a coach, you know, he has a responsibility. And we don't know what he says. We don't know what goes on the bench. But the fact of the matter is – and I mean, maybe this is naive, but to me, it's like if you're Sullivan and you see that Tostito, as I just said, fought Thorburn and essentially accomplished what he was there to do, then you have to tell him at that point, play hockey. You're not there. Mm-hmm. We don't need to. Look, if you want to police, if someone cheaps goes after Connor Sheary or one of our smaller guys, then, you know, you're there to enforce. You're there to look after. But you don't need to be headhunting, right? And don't get me wrong. While the Jets were pissed off about the Wheeler, you know, the Malkin hit on Wheeler, the Penguins were pretty peeved about the two defensemen that got knocked out of the game.
Olimata,
right?
Schultz.
Yeah. So, no, was it Schultz or was it? Yeah, it was Schultz. So there you go. So yeah, two of their top defensemen get knocked out of the game. So we can't forget that, right? Like they know that they've got animosity as well. So I get the fact. I mean, I don't like that he dressed him specifically because he had played so infrequently. But I just think that you're the coach. You have control. And like, we're not naive here. We all know that the coach can say and do things on the bench, make adjustments, and you can go up to a player and say, "Listen, just play hockey now. You don't need to do anything. You don't need to like." And again, I get the fact that you want to separate a guy from the puck, and it's a game, and it's fast and stuff like that. But like. You know, you see Toby Enstrom and you see him turn his back on you. Like, it's not an invitation to take him out, knowing the size disparity. Toby Enstrom's, what, 5'9"? Tom Tostito is 6'5"?
Yeah.
I mean, probably outweighs him by 100 pounds.
Yeah.
And I think it's the most unfortunate, Dave, that you had to see that incident happen in that first period, because the fans would have been happy with just the fights alone, right? And you had the fights back-to-back. You rarely see that in today's NHL. We're going to talk about fighting in the final hour and how it's declined. And Darren Drager had a great piece up on TSN about fighting and the future of fighting. But that incident, I think, really was unfortunate because you had 5 goals. You had so much offense. We haven't even talked about how nice Sean Mathias's goal was. We didn't even talk about how nice the Nick Ehlers goal was. And then you have that incident happen. Now Toby Enstrom is out of the lineup indefinitely. So I want to talk just a little bit about Connor Hellebuck here, guys, before we go to break. And Sean and I spoke about Connor Hellebuck on Tuesday's NHL This Week show. He gets pulled. Now Connor Hellebuck has been pulled 7 times this year. He gives up 3 goals in 57 seconds. The game's almost over. Dave, what did you think of Hellebuck's performance and also the refereeing? Because I thought that the turning point in the game was that 5-on-3. I thought the call on Ben Chiarot was suspect. I think it was a holding call.
Yeah.
I didn't think that was a penalty. And then you had Brian Little called right after that. You give a team like Pittsburgh a 5-on-3, they're most likely going to score 80 or 90% of the time. So what did you think of Hellebuck's performance, and how does he rebound from that performance tonight against Calgary?
You know what? It's interesting. And just to quickly touch on it, because you're right, we glossed over it, but that was probably one of the most exciting first periods of hockey either we've ever seen at the MTS Center or for sure this season. Like, that was an unbelievable period. And you're right, as the hit on Enstrom was unfortunate, but it was such a good first period. And then you roll into that second and you think to yourself, well, okay, are the Jets going to be able to maintain this momentum? And can they get, you know, the big saves from Connor Hellebuck? And can they stay disciplined? And I agree with you. And that Ben Chiarot quote penalty happened right underneath us. And you and I kind of looked at each other in the press box and we were kind of like, was that really, like, we had to watch the replay a number of times trying to figure out, was that really a penalty? And we didn't really think it was. And, you know, again, then you get the Brian Little one and you're thinking to yourself, look at this firepower. Are you going to be able to stop Pittsburgh? Yeah. And, you know, and again, maybe that shot from about 20 feet out, Hellebuck should have had because he saw it. You know, it wasn't his best game. I mean, you know, give up 3 goals in 57 seconds. That's not ideal, obviously. And that just goes to show you how quickly games can turn in the NHL. You know, you're up 3-2, you're feeling good, and the next thing you know, you're down 4-3 or 5-3, whatever it was, and you're feeling bad, and you know that you're playing against a Pittsburgh team, that it's going to be near impossible to try and come back against them. So I thought Hellebuck has just kind of reminded me of the Jets for the most part, to be honest with you. Like, he's been a little inconsistent from the defensive perspective. And Do I think he can have it? Yeah, he's shown that he can bounce back. So, I mean, he's young. He you know, I really don't think that it will be too onerous to for him to, you know, show the bounce back that he's kind of been able to all season.
Yeah, and Connor Hellebuyck has kind of talked about his game as of late, and he said that he's really aspiring, you know, just to be that big, boring goaltender. He just gets his position right, he gets his angles right, and he just lets the puck hit him. You know, on a couple of those goals, especially some of the screen ones, you'd like to see him maybe battle a little harder just to kind of see the lane and maybe get himself into just a little bit of a better position to see the shot coming his way. But other than that, yeah, you mean Pittsburgh, you look at their power play, you look at the firepower they possess, it's tough on a goaltender, especially when you got Crosby and Malkin whipping the puck around as fast as they do. The Jets penalty kill, we've talked about that enough this year. So you combine all those factors, and yeah, Jacob Trouba had a chance to clear the puck. I'm not putting this on Trouba by any means, but there was a point when they were down 5-on-4. He had a moment where he could have cleared the puck twice. Blake Wheeler kind of blows the zone a little bit, just kind of sees maybe an offensive opportunity shorthanded. We know the Jets like to score shorthanded. Trouba can't clears the puck. They take it back in. Mayhem ensues. Brian Little and takes that penalty, and that's when things start to fall apart. So, again, we've seen this before. It's just that inability, really, to get themselves out of those dangerous situations that really have come back to bite them.
We expect Connor Hellebuyck to get the start tonight against the Calgary Flames. It hasn't been confirmed yet, but we expect it to be Connor Hellebuyck just because we haven't seen Michael Hutchinson in a long time, and maybe Michael Hutchinson gets one of those back-to-back games coming up against Nashville or New Jersey, but we're going to keep you updated. Guys, we're going to head to break right now. When we come back, we're going to start to preview the Jets and Flames game tonight at 6 o'clock. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Banks it around to the inside to Dougie Hamilton. Chips it up the boards. Fired across. Here's Tkachuk. 2-on-1 with Backlund. Tkachuk cuts to the middle. Giordano scores!
Second segment here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. That's me. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Love that. Aerosmith.
It's a great,
great band.
Yeah.
So before we get into this Jets-Flames game here, Sean, you tried Jollibee for the first time yesterday. Tell us about that.
Yeah, threw down at the Jollibee. It was a good time. I was getting my skate sharpened for my weekend on the ice, and it's taken a little bit longer than I expected, so I figured might as well cruise down St. James and check out Jollibee, see if there's any lineups or not. There wasn't, so I obviously parked and went inside. And a very efficient ordering system. You order when you're in line, and then when you get to the front of the line, you just pay. They hand you your little slip and your little vibrating disc, and you wait patiently for the delicious fried chicken.
Okay, so the listeners, Sean, want to know what you got, because Jollibee opened, I believe, 3 or 4 months ago.
Right.
It's a fast food chain based out of the Philippines. It's known as the McDonald's of the Philippines. So what did you order?
So I got, I guess, like the intro combo, I guess, like your first time. Welcome to Jollibee. Here's all of our delicious products. So I got the spaghetti, which everyone says was so sweet. It was sweet, but like not as like super sweet as I thought. It was actually a lot more tolerable than I thought it would be. I had a piece of fried chicken, crunchy, salty, delicious, and a mango pie, like a mango peach pie. And here's the best part. They have Dr. Pepper in the fountain drinks.
Wow.
It's like an extinct breed. Like the You never see the Dr. Pepper anymore.
Diet Dr. Pepper too?
I didn't look that far. I saw DP and just the cup was immediately under the fountain.
Remember the alternate version of Dr. Pepper, Dr. Skipper?
Wasn't that Mr. Pip?
I think it depends on what establishment you shop at. Yeah. I'm pretty sure the Superstore
But remember Dr. Skipper was like RC Cola?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. That Dr. Skipper, always up to no good.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you had a very nice enjoyable experience at Jollibee. I haven't been able to check out Jollibee because, at, like you said, last time I went there, there was about 150 people in line.
I figured, listen, there's no line. Yeah. I'm not even that hungry.
Yeah,
but
yeah, there's two in the city now, so make sure you go check out Jollibee. Okay, guys, let's get right into the Jets and the Flames. Puck drop is 6 o'clock. Hustler and Lawless are up at 3 o'clock, and then Rick Ralph has the pregame show at 5 o'clock. The Calgary Flames, guys, are now tied. Actually, no, I shouldn't say that. They're not tied. They're 1 point behind the Edmonton Oilers right now because the Oilers got the point yesterday in the game against the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Calgary Flames now with 78 points. They've won 8 games in a row. The record in the last 16 games is 13-2-1. Brian Elliott is 10-1-1 since the All-Star break. I guess let's get right into this Calgary Flames team, Dave, and how surprised you are at how hot they have been lately.
Well, I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, this is a team that after that loss to Montreal, you know, they went crazy, and they basically said, okay, like, guys, like, we're a better team than what we're displaying. Like, we're better than this. And they've reeled off win after win after win. And you know, every time you expect kind of the wheels to fall off in this Flames team, you know, the goaltending has been stellar, which is what they needed, which is why they brought those guys in. And you know, and specifically Elliott, right? I mean, he got his first shutout as a Flame last game over Montreal. And, you know, they're getting good scoring from which is what they expect. Their defense has been very good. And the fact of the matter, although it's hurt banged up now after that game against Montreal. Was it Montreal that Stone got out, not taken out? And they lost a couple of guys that game. But, you know, I mean, it's just they're balanced, right? They're 19-14 at home. They're 18-12-4 on the road. I mean, they've got very good weapons in there, and they're showing that. I mean, that's the key, right? Like, they're not disproportionately good at home and okay on the road. They're able to go out on the road, even if you're not getting the quote ideal matchups. They're still showing that they can kind of match up with any team. And I mean, is there a team that seems to be putting it all together? You've got Goudreau scoring, Monahan scoring, all the guys they need to be getting goals from and points from are producing, and that's what you need.
It's interesting, yeah, Dave, you talked about that 5-0 loss to Montreal, and, you know, Glenn Gullickson was a relatively new coach in the organization at the time, and he comes out and says this: we were pathetic. It was a pathetic display. No bite back, no kickback, except it right down. Our top guys didn't do anything, and we need someone to step up. Now, when I see that, you can either look at that two ways. You can see a new coach calling out his players and the players either not responding and saying, well, who are you? You know, you come into our organization, you call us out saying we have pathetic attempts of playing hockey. But the Flames did the total opposite. They went in the 180, turned their season around. If you look at their progression throughout the year, they start playing a little bit better. Then they suffer a loss to the Arizona Coyotes, a 5-0 loss, and then it's just boom, gone. So something must have clicked with this team where they were like, you know what? We are better than what we're putting out there. The leadership must have taken over. And you look at this line of Tkachuk, Backlund, and Frolik now. That line, I think, is so crucial for the development of Monahan and Goudreau to alleviate some of that scoring pressure just of how well they're playing. And you essentially have a very well-balanced attack, like Dave was saying. And this team is on fire. Pardon that awful pun.
Well, Sean, that line of Matthew Tkachuk, Michael Backlund, and Michael Frolik has been together for most of the season. So it's not like this line has been together for a week or 3 weeks or something like that. That Glenn Gullickson has stuck with that line for the majority of the season, and it's been a very solid line and kind of started off as a third line. But, you know, you mentioned the depth, Sean, and you know, this Calgary Flames team didn't make the playoffs last year, but a couple of years ago they made the playoffs and got to the second round. But I think that when you look at this team, not only is this a good regular season team, and I'm not saying that this is a team that's going to win the Stanley Cup this year, but I think they could surprise depending on their matchup in the first round. And you look at, you know, up the middle with Michael Backlund, Sean Monahan, Sam Bennett. You got Matt Stage in there on the fourth line with Lance Boma and Alex Chiasson. And it's a team that is now starting to get the goaltending that they thought they were going to get out of Brian Elliott. We talked about it. He's 10-1-1 since the All-Star break. His numbers on the year aren't great, but his numbers have been very good over the last month and a half. And that defense is starting to put the puck in the net. And that was a real staple of that team 2 years ago. Mark Giordano scored against Montreal in that shutout win. Dougie Hamilton's been putting the puck in the net. TJ Brody's had a nice season. Mm-hmm. And Dave mentioned Michael Stone and Dougie Hamilton left the game. And we're not sure. We'll ask George Johnson. He's coming up in about 5 minutes. We'll ask him about those injuries and whether or not they're going to play tonight versus the Jets, but I think it's a very well-balanced team. Chris Versteeg was a nice acquisition by the Flames. He's played really well. Troy Brower. I mean, guys, this team has depth. A couple of years ago when they went to the playoffs, nobody expected the Flames to go to the playoffs. But you look at the way this team is constructed, you've got kind of a mixture of veterans. We talked about it, guys like Versteeg and Brower and Stajan. And you've obviously got the young guns in Monahan and Tkachuk and Gaudreau. And then you've got a lot of talent on defense. And then you've got two good goalies. Chad Johnson's been a very capable backup. Earlier in the season, Dave, he was their number one goaltender. So this is a team probably that you're going to have to look out for.
And, you know, it's got to be nice for him, a local guy getting a chance. You know, he gets to don the jersey of the team he grew up cheering for. So, yeah, you know what? The Flames are a team that you kind of – they're an unpredictable team in that sense, right? Like, you don't know how far they can go. I mean, they're a young team for the most part. Obviously, they do have some veterans. Will they be able to push a team in the, you know, in the playoffs in a first round? You never know. I mean, that's the beauty of the sport, right, is that there's always these unknowns, long series. And, you know, maybe the lack of experience does hurt them in that regard, and, you know, in a seven-game series against a more experienced team if they're playing one. But, you know,
I believe right now they would match up against the Sharks.
Yeah, and I mean the Sharks are
– Which is not a good first-round matchup for the Flames,
although it's funny.
Or anybody.
Yeah, we just saw the Sharks on Monday, and they were – you know, they are what they are, and, you know, you don't go to the Stanley Cup Final by accident as they did last year. So as good as Calgary's been playing, that would be a tough one. Although Calgary and San Jose, for whatever reason, it's always like that game that I always feel like it's always on TV. You always, you know, you turn on the late game, and for whatever reason, it always seems to be like a Sharks-Flames game. So – that wouldn't be a bad one to watch in the first round, if you ask me. But they're an exciting young team, and you know what? It's indicative of a lot of the Canadian teams right now. They're a young and up and coming team, right? And it's interesting because yesterday Paul Friesen of the Winnipeg Sun was asking the players and some of the coach and Coach Maurice whether he saw the similarities between the Jets and the Flames, because, you know, both teams made the playoffs 2 years ago and then took a step back last year and, you know, added some youth and added dynamic young scorers. Obviously, the Jets in Patrick Laine and the Flames in Matthew Tkachuk. And the Flames seem to have kind of gotten it. And now the Flames have been healthier, I think, for the most part, and their defense has been more solid than the Jets' defense has been. But, you know, Paul was asking about the similarities between the two teams and why the Flames have been able to kind of take that step forward while the Jets seem to be mired in, you know, and not moving forward. Now, obviously, you could attribute that to probably the defense and the goaltending for the Jets, whereas the Flames have been solid in that area, and hence the reason why we see them rip off 9-0-1 in the last 10 and, you know, be well entrenched in that playoff hunt.
You know, Dave, you just mentioned Matthew Tkachuk, and I think if it wasn't for Patrick Laine, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, I think he would be getting more Calder Trophy consideration.
Oh, yeah.
12 goals, 43 points in 63 games. He's also got 94 penalty minutes, so you know that he has some of that fight in him like his dad did, right? He's not afraid to get into the physical aspect of the game, get into the corners, lay a big hit. So Matthew Tkachuk is having a great season. We didn't even think he would play in the NHL at the start of the season. We thought he might go back to the London Knights and try to get another Memorial Cup. So he's had a great year. We're going to head to break right now, guys. When we come back, we're going to be joined by George Johnson. He writes for CalgaryFlames.com. He covered the Flames for many years with the Calgary Herald. We're going to talk to him and continue to preview tonight's Jets-Flames game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. I'm Ezra Ginsberg, joined by Dave Minuk and Sean Assor. Drew Mandel is slacking off and not here. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to be joined by our good friend George Johnson of CalgaryFlames.com. George, how are you?
I'm surviving. If I closed my eyes, it's so cold here, I think it was Westwood again.
Yeah, it's pretty cold here right now, but I think the Flames are coming in red hot, so maybe they're gonna warm it up a little bit here in the city of Winnipeg.
Yeah, they have been. The last 8 games has been quite a roll for them. You know, we had them kind of written off, and now they're pushing the Oilers and the Ducks, you know, for the second and third spot in the Pacific Division. So it's been quite the turnaround for sure.
George, in Thursday night's win over the Montreal Canadiens, Dougie Hamilton and Michael Stone left the game. Can you just provide us with an injury update on those two players and whether or not we're expecting to see them tonight against the Jets?
Well, you know, they keep these things, even for the .com people, pretty hush-hush. Hamilton looked like a laceration to his leg. Stone certainly looked like a shoulder injury. As you say, both left, and they played virtually the entire third period with 4D. Yesterday, Glenn Gulletson said he was hoping one of the two, which I would assume would be Hamilton, but I'm just guessing, could play tonight, and that the other injury wouldn't be an extended one. So they've called up Rasmus Anderson from Stockton, and he's there. And they have the stopgap in Dennis Wiedemann, who hasn't played during the entire eight-game winning streak. There, and one or two of those gentlemen will be in the lineup tonight.
George, what would you attribute the Flames, you know, last 10 games to? Like, is it one area in particular, or is it a number of things that they've been doing well?
Well, I mean, the little feller is heating up, and that certainly helps. He had 4 points the other night, goal and three helpers. He's overtaken Michael Backlund for the team scoring league at 48 points. In the eight games, he has 13 points. That line is heating up. Michael Ferland has been a fantastic addition over on the wing with Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan. He's got 6 goals in his last 8 games. You start there. I think mainly, though, it's this defensive structure and stability and safety net that Glenn Gulletson has been pounding at these guys for months and months, as finally seems to have set in. I mean, the start of this streak was a 6-5 win in Nashville when they were up 4-1, then down 5-4, then won 6-5 in overtime on February the 21st. But since that time, in 7 games, they've given up 10 goals. And I think that's kind of where it all starts. Brian Elliott's 11-1-1 in his last 13 games. Looks like the goaltender that they were hoping for when they got him in the off season from St. Louis. So I think it starts there. I think defensively they're a lot better, and their talisman Johnny Gaudreau is heating up, and you know, when that happens, they can be a dangerous team.
George, I'm curious. You mentioned Michael Ferland, and what an absolutely tremendous second half of the season he's having. From an outsider's perspective, you know, watching the Flames, you see a guy like Michael Ferland playing with Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, you think to yourself, well, I'm not really sure if all three of those fit together, but maybe you watch the team much closer than the most of us. What's working so well with that trio and with Ferland inserted into that lineup?
Well, Ferland so far, you know, since he's been here, you remember, too, 2015 when he kind of arrived on the scene, they had Michael Ferland for mayor signs plopped on lawns and, you know, church signs as you went into churches. Yay, Michael Ferland, okay. So, I mean, he's been really a streaky kind of a guy. He's had stretches where he's just looked like the power forward, you know, that they had hoped for. I mean, you know, the Rick Tocchet kind of, you know, Kevin Stevens, those kind of guys, that kind of player. And then he just seems to drift out for periods of time, too. He's on an upswing right now. Getting to play with those two guys, especially with Gaudreau, as I say, starting to look like the wee wizard that he is, you know, has really made a difference. And he adds size to the line. You know, he takes care of little Johnny, which is, you know, something that they need around here. And you know, he just they've said since day one that he might have the best shot on the team. Showed exactly that the other night. Got a puck, no time, just wired in behind Al Montoya before he could even breathe, much less move. And you know, he seems to be gaining confidence. He's one of those guys that, you know, because he's sort of been in and out, he's been on the fourth line, he's been on the third line, now he's on the first line. The confidence level and the confidence factor with him is huge, and right now he's got it.
We're joined by George Johnson on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. George covers the Calgary Flames for CalgaryFlames.com. George, I wanted to ask you about Chris Versteeg. He's been known as the Jets killer around these parts. He's got a couple goals in his last three games. He was a guy that signed a PTO with the Edmonton Oilers and then ended up signing with the Calgary Flames. I believe at one point Chris Versteeg thought he was going to be going and playing overseas.
Playing Europe, yeah.
Yeah. How surprised have the Flames been with the way Chris Versteeg has played, and how important is to have a guy like Chris Versteeg and his Stanley Cup pedigree playing on that third line with Sam Bennett and Troy Brouwer?
Well, it's certainly, you know, I mean, I think he's been better than anybody could have envisioned, although they'll tell you that, you know, oh, no, you know, Chris Versteeg, blah, 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 blah. But as you said, he was on a PTO in Edmonton. It didn't work out. He comes down here where he has really made a difference is on the point, on the power play. I mean, the way he passes the puck, and again, you know, you guys know better than anybody else. Until you see a guy every night or every second night or whatever it is, if you just see him fitfully or occasionally, oh, Chris Versteeg, yeah, he was kind of a, you know, a spot player on the Chicago team and, you know, when they won the Cup and all that kind of stuff. Until you see the guy all the time, he's as good a passer of the puck as they have here now. He's a smart guy. He's not Usain Bolt on skates anymore, but he really has sort of solidified the power play more than anything. I think he's so good with the puck. His choice, his pass selection, his choices are first rate. And you know he's a really good. You know, you hate to say it because it sounds cliche, but he's a really good guy, and everyone else in the room likes him, which certainly helps. And it doesn't hurt, as you said, to have that Stanley Cup pedigree, especially when you're playing with a guy like, you know, Sam Bennett, who's still kind of tentatively trying to find his way in the league. Now, he's been a fantastic and very, very, very underrated acquisition.
And it doesn't hurt that he's a good Alberta boy as well.
Oh, you know, it's just, yeah, he's from Lethbridge. I remember covering him in the lockout year when the Hitmen had Getzlaff and Ladd, and him and Seabrook were playing for the Lethbridge junior team. And, you know, those were fun series to cover. I guess it just makes me even older than I am, but there you go.
George, sometimes when former players transition to front office, it doesn't always work out. But, you know, it seems to have with Craig Conroy and Martin Jelena in Calgary. What have they brought to the organization? And as an aside, does Craig Conroy ever not have a smile on his face?
I tell you, I said to him one time, I said, geez, Murphy, I don't know what we'd have to do to get you ticked off. I just don't know it. Even when he's mad, he seems to, you know, he's got that kind of, I don't know. He's got that kind of bubbly personality, and you know, when he first got the job, when he first kind of segued from player, he was waived by the Flames and then came back and retired here and then took the job with Jay Feaster at the time, who was the general manager. You know, it was like, oh, Craig's a great guy, and you know, they're giving him a job and good for them and all that kind of stuff, but anybody you talk to in the hockey world, or certainly in the Flames hierarchy, thinks this guy is, you know, he's earning his keep. He's, you know, he's done everything. He's been out with the scouts. He's pro scouted. He's amateur scouted. You know, he's involved in the inner workings of everything. You know, Brian Burke says Craig's networking, because of his personality, is second to none, and Marty's the same way. Martin Jelena, those two guys, if you were picking an all nice guy Flame team, they would certainly be in the running, if not in the starting five. And you know, I once referred to Martin Jelena as kind of like Mary Poppins. He's practically perfect in every way, and he got a little ticked about that, but it's true. I mean, Martin Jelena, if you can find anybody that's got a bad word to say about Martin Jelena, I want to meet him. Because, yeah, boy, he's a stringent marker, I'll tell you that. And to see both of them, you know, still in the organization and still kind of building, you know, we always talk about tradition and legacy and stuff like that. And it's great to see those two guys that were in that 2004 run still part of the organization and a vibrant part of the organization.
George, we were just setting up the today's game prior to having you on today, and we were just discussing the balance now of the Calgary roster. And I was talking about the Tkachuk, Backlund, Frolik line, and I'm just curious, from your perspective, how important has this line been for just alleviating some of the pressure off of the top guys like Monahan and Goudreau, so they can kind of focus on what they do best as opposed to, you know, taking care of all aspects of the game?
Well, Michael Backlund has been their MVP. I don't think there's any question about that. You know, he's having a career year points-wise. You know, he's a plus 12. He plays against all the top centers. They call him Michael Selke here. And you would hope, you know, the Selke's kind of an award. It's kind of like Claude Rains at the end of Casablanca, round up the usual suspects. We've always got the usual suspects. We've got Kopitar, and we've got Zetterberg, and, you know, and we've got, these guys. You would hope they would look outside the box a little bit and look at Michael Backlund, because he has been their MVP. Matthew Tkachuk, again, in a non-Austin Matthews, non-Patrick Laine year, he'd certainly be, you know, a prime Calder. He'd be getting lots of chatter for the Calder. Had a really good year. Irritating as all get out. He's kind of like a 60-minute bout with gout. He just got everybody ticked off at him. And Frolik, as you guys know, is kind of the ballast on that line. He's just very, very, very consistent. That line, while the other guys, especially Johnny Gaudreau, were trying to get their stuff together, for want of a better word, that line has kept them relevant, has kept them sort of in the hunt. And like I say, that line has been their best line, and I think Michael Backlund is certainly their MVP. I don't care where he winds up in the scoring list team-wise.
George Johnson of CalgaryFlames.com. George, we always appreciate you coming on, and enjoy tonight's game between the Jets and the Flames.
Thanks, guys. You guys are the best. You know that.
We try.
There you go. As long as you try.
Thanks a lot, George.
Thanks, George. Okay. Thanks, George.
All right, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Kyle Connor, Jack Roslovic, and Eric Comrie, Dave. I know you've watched them a lot this year. We're going to talk about whether or not they should see some time with the big club this year, towards the end of the season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Over to play at Stojkovic. He'll get it out. Kyle Connor in the neutral zone. Inside the final minute, Connor with a shot at the hat trick. He scores! Toss the hats. That's three for number 41. And the Moose have a 4-2 lead.
That's Mitch Peacock with the call. A little hattie for Kyle Connor. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk, Sean Asor. I want to get into Kyle Connor, Jack Roslovic, and Eric Comrie, some of the guys down with the Moose, and whether or not we're going to see them up with the Jets at some point from now until the end of the season. First, guys, I want to update from practice. Scott Billick of the Winnipeg Free Press. We mentioned earlier, Dave, that the Jets have recalled Julian Melchiori, which is basically just recalling him from down the hall.
Yeah.
Because the Jets and Moose are both in the middle of long homestands right now. The Moose now having played two games of an eight-game homestand, yes. And then the Jets right now their homestand, and then they go on the road for a few games. No Ben Chiarot skating this morning. No Chris Thorburn. So it looks like, guys, Nick Batan is going to go into the lineup and play on that fourth line with Marco Dano and Sean Mathias, which has been a bit of a change from what we've seen on the third line. Andrew Kopp has been skating on the third line with Adam Lowry and Joel Armia. And then this is the interesting move. Well, we'll get to the defense in a second here, guys, but Nikolai Ehlers is on the top line with Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler, and then you've got Matthew Perreault, Brian Little, and Patrick Laine. So the switch there is Scheifele and Little, because we've had Scheifele with Matthew Perreault and Patrick Laine for quite some time now. And then the D pairings, which are a little bit interesting, Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba, that's nothing new. We've seen Morrissey and Trouba paired up before, but you've got Mark Stewart paired up with Dustin Byfuglien on the second pair, and then you've got Julian Melchiori and Paul Postma on that third pair. Now, we should mention, we're not sure if Ben Chiarot, if it's just a maintenance thing. So we'd probably expect it to be Ben Chiarot and Paul Postma, because that has been the third pair for quite some time. Also, it's a possibility that you have Ben Chiarot with Dustin Byfuglien. So we don't necessarily know that these D pairings are going to be the same D pairings you see tonight, but just a little bit interesting. Notes from Jets practice. Looks like Ben Chiarot, possibility that he doesn't play tonight, but we know that Julian Melchiori has been called up, and if Ben Chiarot can't go, Julian Melchiori will go into the lineup for Ben Chiarot, and obviously Mark Stewart will be in there as well.
Right, which would be three games in a row for Julian Melchiori, because he played the last two nights for the Moose.
That's right.
And Connor Hellebuck gets the start, which is his 13th straight start for the Winnipeg Jets.
So, Dave, I want to get into this, because we've got Jordan Tutu coming up at 10 o'clock.
Yep.
He's going to join us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. I want to get into Kyle Connor, Jack Roslovic, and Eric Comrie, the top prospects for the Jets playing for the Moose right now. Kyle Connor was named the AHL Player of the Week. He's been red hot for the Moose. Jack Roslovic as well has been playing very good. And then you have Eric Comrie, who last night, correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, started his 21st game of the last 24 games for the Moose. So he's been playing almost all of the games for the Moose with Jamie Phillips backing him up. Now the question, and I know I've talked to you about this a lot, Dave, up in the press box while we've been watching either the Jets or the Moose, should the Jets call up one or two or three of these players from now until the end of the season and see what they can do? Or do you think that Jack Roslovic, Kyle Connor, and Eric Comrie should spend the rest of the year with the Moose?
Again, personally, this is just my opinion, I don't see the value in bringing these guys up. The question would be, I mean, unless, barring injury, if you have an injury that you think necessitates bringing one of these guys up to play, specifically Kyle Connor, in the top two lines for the Jets, then maybe. But to me, the whole idea, if you're a draft and develop organization, which the Jets say they are, then the idea of drafting but not developing seems somewhat, you know, ridiculous, because the whole idea is these guys need to A, learn the game, B, dominate the game at the AHL level. And sure, they're playing well, and sure, they're getting some points, which is important. But the fact is that there's a lot of things that they need to add to their game, including, which we've talked about before on the show, size, and which comes with age, and just experience. And the fact is that you have to learn the game at the AHL level. There's no negative, you know. I think the stat is like 80%, or maybe it's not that high, but it's I think it's between 70% and 80% of players have gone through the AHL system. And we're not talking about like mediocre players. We're talking about like upper echelon NHL players have gone through an AHL system prior to making the most players at 18, 19 don't make a jump into the NHL and dominate. So it's no, I mean, and the prime example for Winnipeg Jets fans is Josh Morrissey. I mean, I watched Josh Morrissey play, every game he played for the Moose at home last year until he got hurt. But the fact is that Josh Morrissey was seen by many as a bust because he wasn't immediately in the NHL. Now, for defensemen specifically, it takes longer, and it's going to take, it was, you know, we're all surprised, a lot of us are not surprised that Josh Morrissey is having success in NHL, but the level of success he's having, I was surprised by that, because I didn't expect him to come in and play that well. But the fact is that, like, you can't describe someone as a bust because they're not dominating. Like, nobody, Patrick Laine is a generational talent. The guy is not what you're finding in every draft. Most players need time to develop. So that was somewhat of a long-winded way to get to my answer, as which is no, I don't think so, because, you know, despite the fact that Kyle Connor has 11 goals in his last, I think, eight games or something like that, and has been unbelievable and would be the team leader had he been playing with the Moose, you know, he's got, I think, about 8 points per, you know, his average is 0.80 points per game. So he would be the leader had he played, if you extrapolate his season out. But the fact of the matter is that his development and what he's learning, and Jack Roslovic, who plays center, which obviously is a harder position to play and is one that takes a little longer, it needs time in the AHL. Eric Comrie, despite the fact that he's getting a lot of starts, has growth to go. And Mike McIntyre, who we're going to talk to in a little bit, wrote a fantastic article at Eric Comrie yesterday in the Winnipeg Free Press. But the fact is that he needs to play the net. And we've seen what happens when, what are you going to do? You're not going to rush him in and play him with Connor Hellebuck, because look what happens when you play with two young goalies. So you need Eric Comrie in the AHL playing under that system and being able to be the everyday goalie.
Sean, I want to get your take here quickly. I just want to go over the stats for these three players. Dave mentioned Kyle Connor's got 11 goals in his last 8 games, which is just incredible. He's got 19 goals, 13 assists, 32 points in 40 games this year. Jack Roslovic's got 11 goals, 26 assists for 37 points in 52 games. Eric Comrie in 40 games has a record of 14-20-2 with a 2.76 goals against and a 9-12 save percentage. That was before yesterday's game. So
it went up a little bit.
Right. And yeah, he let in 4 goals last night, unfortunately, in a 4-1 loss to Charlotte. Sean, in your opinion, would you like to see Connor and Roslovic maybe play for the Moose? Pardon me, for the Jets? Or do you think maybe they should just spend the rest of the year playing top line minutes for the Moose?
Yeah, I think they're best suited just to continue with the Moose, continue the... It's not so much the minutes as much as the role. And when you're trying to develop these guys into like a two-way responsible centerman and a skill-scoring winger, it just doesn't make much sense, barring an injury and there's a spot on the Jets roster, for them to come back and play third, fourth-line minutes. I think that just kind of hinders what's been a really good season of development for these guys. And let's say you bring Kyle Connor up and he's on this torrid pace in the A. He comes up and he slumps for the remainder of the season. Well, then he goes into the offseason thinking with a little bit of doubt in his mind, with a little bit of question marks. In my opinion, for a guy like that, keep him in the A. Let him keep dominating. Send him into the offseason with that hunger to do that again next year, maybe at the top club level. And bring up a guy like Chase DeLeo, who's had the taste of NHL regular action experience. And then you can see the Jets can take a look at where he was last year. As I know it's a small sample size, it's just a couple games, but you can look at his game this year and kind of compare and say, okay, this is where Chase is going in his development route. This is where he's improved. This is where he still needs to improve. I think from a development perspective, you bring up the guys who have already had the taste. Like Connor has been up here before. That's why I would take him over Roslovic. But you just want to see where the path of these guys are going, and that's why I feel like a DeLeo would be a more of a suited option.
Yeah, and I think there are a lot of Jets fans out there that really want to see Kyle Connor and Jack Roslovic play for the Jets this year. But as Dave mentioned, and as Sean mentioned as well, the Jets have a long-term plan, and the plan this year was certainly for Jack Roslovic to spend the majority of the year with the Manitoba Moose. Kyle Connor obviously started the season off with the Jets, but when it was evident that he was struggling at the NHL level and they didn't want him necessarily playing on the third or fourth line, then they decided that they wanted him to play top six role with the Manitoba Moose, and now he's finally starting to dominate like they thought he would. And we know he was a Hobie Baker finalist last year, Dave. He was absolutely tearing it up, and now he's really starting to play well for the Manitoba Moose. We talked about it, American Hockey League Player of the Week. So I am with you guys. I don't necessarily think that they need to play any time with the Jets this year. You let them finish the season with the Manitoba Moose, and then you see if one of these two players or both of these players can make the team next year. I would be pretty surprised if at least one of them isn't with the Jets next year, if not both of them, because we know that these are the top two prospects in the Jets, forward prospects in the Jets system right now. It's just a matter of time before these guys are in the NHL, Dave.
Yeah, again, I would just sum it up as saying that to me, it's position. And I think a perfect example is Nick Petan. I think Nick Petan is a guy who probably should be in the AHL this year playing with these guys and really developing in that role and playing, you know, it is sometimes about role. Playing PK, like Jack Roslovic plays all aspects of the game, PK, PP, has the opportunity to be at the end of the game trying to tie it up. So and he's not playing fourth line minutes, or he's not sitting in the press box. To me, for young guys, that's the opportunity in the AHL.
Dave, we're going to head to break now. We've got Jordan Tutu of the Chicago Blackhawks on the line, also former member of the Brandon Wheat Kings. When we come back, we're going to talk to Jordan Tutu. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Back to Seabrook with a long shot. It's in front of Tutu. He scores! Jordan Tutu's first goal of the year. After he turned the momentum around in the first period, he doubles the lead in the second.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, Find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to be joined by Chicago Blackhawks forward Jordan Tootoo. Jordan, how are you?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me this morning.
Thanks very much for joining us, Jordan. We want to get into, right off the bat, you recently signed a one-year contract extension with the Chicago Blackhawks. How nice was that for you to have the security of knowing that you have a contract for next year?
Well, obviously, at this point in my career, you know, it's always a bonus to keep playing, and you know, for them to believe in me and give me another year is it's a great opportunity for me to keep living my dream, and you know, I'm just very excited about it.
Jordan, you scored your first goal of the season earlier in the week in the 5-3 win over the Predators. How did it feel to pick up that goal, and how did it feel to pick up that goal against a team that you were drafted by and played for 8 seasons with?
Yeah, obviously, you know, I would have liked to get my goal a lot sooner, but, you know, this league is it's tough to score. Goalies are bigger and faster, and, you know, to score my first goal in the arena where I started my career was obviously a joyful moment. You know, my teammates, you know, have been great supporters throughout the whole year, and you know, to see the excitement in the dressing room and on the bench was awesome.
Jordan, I'm curious. We hear so much here in Winnipeg about the greatness that is Coach Quenneville. I'm just curious. What's your relationship been like with the Hawks head coach thus far, and what's kind of maybe surprised you about Coach Q?
Well, you know, obviously he's a great coach for a reason. He's a player's coach. He understands, you know, what players need and the amount of rest and things like that. So, you know, we've had a great relationship. You know, I think communication is number one. And, you know, there's been, you know, times where I'm not in the lineup, but, you know, I could speak on behalf of every player that communication a little goes a long ways, and, you know, keeps you involved. It keeps you on your toes and ready to play. So Coach Q has been fantastic. That's why he's one of the best in the league.
We're joined by Chicago Blackhawks forward Jordan Tootoo on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Jordan, you're obviously someone who has dropped the gloves many times over the course of your career, including this season. You had a scrap with Nashville Predators forward Cody McLeod recently. With fighting on the decline, why do you think fighting still has a place in today's game?
Well, obviously, it's the history of it. You know, it's part of the game. You know, I think every team needs a guy that, you know, needs a guy that isn't afraid to drop the gloves to stick up for your teammates. And, you know, it just kind of puts onus on other players that, you know, there's someone, if things go south, you know, someone's on the other side. So, you know, obviously the game evolves over the years, and, you know, nowadays you got to be able to play the game, and you know, fortunately, you know, I'm able to do that, and you know, those role players are few and far between.
Jordan, you started your career in the Western Conference with Nashville, and then you went over to play in Detroit and New Jersey in the East, and now you're back in the West with the Hawks. Have you noticed if the style of play in each conference has changed during that time?
Well, not necessarily. I think, you know, the travel schedule is a lot different. You know, out east, I think our furthest game in our division was less than an hour away. So, you know, we were home almost every night in our own beds. And, you know, out west here, you know, the travel is definitely, there's a lot more travel. But, you know, I'm used to it. I played in Nashville for a lot of years and used to travel and whatnot. So as far as style of play, I don't think there's that much of a difference. You know, maybe the West is a little more physical, bigger guys. And, you know, out east, it's more of maybe a skilled, you know, faster game. But overall, the game has really become a lot faster, and you know, you see a lot more goals, which is what the fans want to see.
Jordan, we hear plenty of mixed reviews league-wide, and I'm just curious from your personal perspective, what are your thoughts on the bye week and teams coming off, you know, not the greatest of records when they return from the five-day bye? So I'm curious, just how do you feel the break is?
Well, you know, obviously it's great for the mind and body to heal up a little bit. You know, but you look at the scheduling, you know, we're playing two games in three nights every other day, and it's pretty hectic. I think we got our last 15 or 16 games here. We're playing in 30 nights, so we're pretty busy. You know, I think league-wide, there's a lot of mixed reviews about it, but me personally, you know, I don't mind it. For a guy that plays a pretty physical game, the body needs a little rest every now and then.
We're joined by Chicago Blackhawks forward Jordan Tutu on the Legal Curve Hockey Show Hotline on TSN 1290. Jordan, last year your wife Jennifer gave birth to your daughter, Sienna Rose. How has your life changed since your daughter has entered this world?
Well, it's been a blessing. You know, obviously, life's not all about hockey when you become a father, and you know, so it's been a great experience so far. My wife Jennifer is enjoying the motherhood part of it, and Sienna's growing daily. She's 10 months now, and she's walking around. So the next phase now is coming home and chasing her around for the rest of the day. So it's been great, though. I enjoy it thoroughly, and looking forward to having a few more.
Jordan, the inaugural Terrence Tutu Memorial Cup will take place next weekend in Rankin Inlet. It was originally scheduled to take place this weekend, but due to weather, it was postponed. Can you tell us about the event and what it means to your family to have the event named after your brother?
Well, it's a huge honor for our family, and you know, for the community to embrace the remembrance of my brother. You know, he was a guy that you know, left a legacy behind, and you know, we just want to remember that, and you know, for the senior men to approach my family and ask us if they would name a tournament after him, it was a no-brainer. You know, it brings the community together, brings awareness, suicide prevention awareness together throughout the whole North. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, it's about the kids. You know, we're raising money to help the youth able to travel and experience tournaments in the South. And, you know, the hardest part is raising money to leave the community to travel as a team. It's cost a lot of money, so I think this event's going to be a great outcome overall. You know, unfortunately, Mother Nature, you can't do nothing about it, but you know, we're looking forward to it next weekend.
Jordan, you've said that Kelly McCrimmon has had, you know, a magnificent impact on your hockey career. I'm just curious, do you how often do you keep in touch with Kelly?
We keep in touch quite often. You know, he's been a huge factor in my success throughout my career. And, you know, for him to believe in me at a tender young age and give me many chances to fulfill my dream as an NHL hockey player, he was a stepping stone in my career. You know, he's a guy that I truly admire and look up to. And, you know, I'm very happy that he's got an opportunity to be a great NHL GM one day.
Jordan, I believe you're the first member of the new community to play in the NHL. What does that mean to you to have that sort of that history attached to your name?
Yeah, it's a huge honor to be a role model for the kids of the North, not only in Nunavut, but across Canada. You know, for a kid that comes from a small town, it doesn't matter where you come from, as long as you have, you know, dreams and you stick to them and, you know, you work hard daily, anything's possible. You know, obviously you're going to hit a lot of adversity through life, but part of success is failing. And don't get me wrong, I've failed many times, but I've gotten back up and you know, lived to fight another day. So it's, you know, to be part of history is an honor.
Well, Jordan, I know you've been an inspiration to many young players, so we really appreciate you coming on this morning. We wish you the best of luck with the rest of the Chicago Blackhawks season. I believe you guys play tomorrow against Minnesota. Is that right?
Yeah, we do. So it's going to be a great test, great Central Division rival. You know, two huge points on the line. So it's going to be a great afternoon.
But you guys are going to win that one, right?
Well, I believe we can. So, you know, this game is crazy. So anything's possible.
Jordan, thanks again so much for coming on this morning. And again, good luck the rest of the season and into the playoffs. It looks like Chicago's going to go on a nice long run.
Okay, guys, appreciate it, and all the best.
All right, thanks again. Jordan Tootoo, Chicago Blackhawks forward. Let's head to break. We'll be back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're already into hour two.
Where does the time go?
When did that happen? Big thanks to Jordan Tootoo of the Chicago Blackhawks for coming on. I've always been a huge fan of Jordan Tootoo. I remember seeing him play with his brother for the OCN Blizzard.
Which were saved recently.
That would have been, it seems like, mid-90s, late 90s. Then he went on to a really good career with the Brandon Wheat Kings, and then he had, obviously, an awesome start to his career with the Nashville Predators. Then he went to Detroit, and now he's playing for the Chicago Blackhawks. I think it's great for him that he's now going to be on a Stanley Cup contender, really, for the first time in his career, maybe with the exception of the Detroit Red Wings. But, you know, at that time, you know, they weren't a contender. So really appreciate Jordan coming on the show. Guys, I want to get into some Olympic talk here. And, you know, Gary Bettman and Bill Daly came out this week and basically said, nothing has changed. Unless something changes, we're not going to the 2018 Winter Olympics. The NHL came out with a statement and said that they're proceeding with a schedule for the 2017-18 season without the Olympics in that schedule. The question I have for you guys, is that a bad thing? Are you okay with the NHL not going to the Olympics? And do you have a problem with the NHL saying that, well, it's really the 2022 Olympics that we're interested in. And then you had Jacob Voracek of the Philadelphia Flyers come out and say that, hey, hold on a second, the NHL hasn't really consulted the players. We want to go. Jacob Voracek was at the 2014 Olympics in Sochi. We know Alexander Ovechkin has said he'll go to the Olympics regardless if the NHL will be participating or not. What do you guys think? Do you care? Has anything changed? Are we completely ruling out, Dave, the possibility that the NHL goes in 2018?
Well, I mean, it's a couple of things. First of all, Ted Leonsis, the owner of the Washington Capitals, has already given his blessing to Alexander Ovechkin and any other guys, probably Backstrom, who would want to go and play for their countries. So that's interesting from that perspective, that you've already got some fractures within the ownership structure of the NHL saying, you know, some owners will let their guys go, and then how do some let their guys go and others do not? I thought Voracek's comments yesterday were hilarious. Like when Bill Daly goes, we're not going to the Olympics, and Voracek's like, of course you're not going to the Olympics. Nobody wants to see you play. Nobody's there to see you. They're there to see us. Like he was pissed, and with good reason. The players want to play. It means a lot to be able to wear the flag of your country. That it's the highest honor in sport to be able to get that sort of recognition that you're a member of that elite few who get that honor. So I definitely understand from the players' perspective why they're doing it. And to be honest with you, from the NHL, their perspective, it's a money thing, which we know that's generally their number one modus operandi. And number two, you never know with them whether it's a leverage thing, you know, because we know for a fact that they've created two schedules, one with the Olympics in it and one without. And sure, maybe they're moving forward with the one without, but the fact is they have the other one. They could just be using this as a tool to the NHLPA. And we've heard that kind of come out a little bit as talking about how, well, maybe the players will give this up or maybe they'll do that. So, again, sometimes there's a lot of negotiations that go on either in front of us in the media and also behind the scenes. So sometimes this stuff is just done through as a part of a negotiation, part of leverage to say, okay, you want something, we're going to maybe be willing to give it to you. It's going to take something to give it back. So we don't know if this is just the NHL playing a game. And the NHL's got a knowing that the players may take a significant stand on playing in the Olympics next season. But me personally, I love it. It's the reason why I watch the Olympics. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, I don't watch the Summer Olympics. I don't really care about them. I watch the Winter Olympics to a certain degree.
But you don't watch the pole vault?
No, I'm not a pole vaulter. And to be honest with you, like the Olympics overall, like I kind of look at what they do to these host countries and I think to myself, like, is it really worth the cost to bankrupt these nations to put on these events? But moving aside from the geopolitical aspect of the Olympics, I simply look at them and I say to myself, would I watch the Olympics without the NHL? No. And further to that point, do I think it's fair that the NHL could pick and choose and kind of destroy the continuity of going to all the Olympics since they decided to start participating? I don't think that's right. I don't think you can skip South Korea and decide to go to China because you see China as a bigger opportunity. And because with all due respect to anybody who's can look at a watch and say, well, wait a second, the time scale difference between North America and South Korea and North America and China, I don't know if it's identical, but I was just in China and I can tell you, it's a significant difference in time between China and North America. So you're not going to be any really advantaged more by watching these games if they're in 4 years in China.
But if the NHL doesn't participate in the 2018 Winter Olympics, are they justified in saying we are not participating because we do not profit from the Olympics? Because that's essentially what they've said. And we know that the double IIHF has said that they're going to cover the cost, the travel, the insurance, all of that, accommodations would be included in travel. IIHF has said, we're going to cover that. So that's not the issue. That was the issue before. It sounds like a majority of the owners, maybe some of them are different than others, they have said that. Why are we going to close the season down, risk our players potentially getting injured, when we're not making any money from this, even though there's obvious spin-offs of having the Olympics in the NHL because you promote the game and, you know, you can sell, you know, merchandise and tickets, maybe not directly, but indirectly, just for the game being at the Olympic stage, right? It grows the game, maybe not in a direct way, right? So are owners justified in saying, no, we don't want to go to the Olympics because we don't make any money from it?
And if you look at the World Cup, that was kind of their idea, right? Like, let's create this, like, pseudo, tournament that will be exciting and kind of, you know, through the North America and their Team Europe, and try and make an alternative so we can have this as opposed to where, for the record, as you just talked about, as they're making a profit off of. And now they can say, oh, here we go. We're deriving income. So everybody's making money, including the players, although they're really not making a significant amount. And the owners are making money. The NHL is making money. So, you know, that, to your point, is what their driving force is. But at the same time, who cares about the World Cup? Because I can tell you right now, I didn't care about the World Cup.
No,
I don't know that I watched much of it at all. Maybe I watched some of the games that had Jets players involved just to see how they were coming off of the summer. But like, no, I wasn't particularly interested. The Olympics, yes, because as a Canadian, you're vested in it. I wasn't invested in whether Team Canada beat Team North America, but you're vested as a Canadian to watch Team Canada play Team Russia, Team USA.
Sean, would you watch the Olympics if it didn't feature NHL players?
I would, only because I'm just a sport junkie, and when the Olympics are on, it's always on in my background, and just whatever random sport is on TV, I'll sit back and enjoy it, just because international competition, pardon me, is gets me excited.
Have some water, Sean.
Yeah, got it. It's some of the most fun to watch. These people train for essentially half a decade for their moment to shine. Couple weeks, a week maybe, and they're going up against their respective best competition around the world. So from that point, I love watching it. I love watching international competition. From a hockey perspective, it's the highlight of the whole event because it's the best players that we watch on a regular basis combined with their fellow countrymen. Essentially, it's a worldwide all-star game with defense and intensity. And when games are on, when Canada's playing, everybody all day is watching the clock. It's the only talk around the office, around your prospective workstations, wherever. Are we watching the game? Can't wait for the game. I remember the build-up for the Canada-Russia game in 2010. I believe it was the semifinal game. That was just the craziest build-up to that game. No one could focus on anything. So to eliminate that from my life, that's a little sad.
Until the World Cup of Hockey grows into something close to that, the Olympics are still going to be the marquee event, right?
You look at the World Cup, and they couldn't even fill the seats in the semis, and people were choosing preseason hockey over watching the World Cup. So from a fan base perspective, I don't know if hockey fans have latched on just the way they have for the Olympics yet. But like I said, it would be a shame. I would still watch it, but I love Olympic hockey with NHL players. It's the best.
And I think it's going to be interesting, guys, to see what type of influence the NHLPA has in this, because they are going to probably put some type of pressure on the NHL and the IOC, but the NHL seems to be pretty steadfast in their position right now, saying that we're not going to go unless anything changes. And you hear about, you know, that the fact that there are logistical issues and time differences and all of that, but that wasn't an issue when they decided to go in 1998 in Nagano. So right now it looks like the NHL is not going to participate in the 2018 Olympics, but a lot can change. We know that back in 2014 in Sochi, the decision to go to the Olympics didn't come until the summer of 2013, right? So we probably have at least another 2, 3, 4 months to go here before it's a final decision. But right now it looks like there certainly is a possibility that the NHL doesn't go. I've said all along I think that the NHL is going to go to the Olympics, so I think that there still is a small possibility. But we know that Gary Bettman and Bill Daly, they aren't afraid to take a position and stick with it, right? And right now it seems like the big issue for them is that nothing has changed as far as the stance on the IOC and the IHF, in addition to sharing profits, I guess, because we know the costs are being covered. That's not the issue. It's not going to cost the NHL anything. The only thing it's really going to cost them is the break in the schedule and the potential that there might be an injury to a star player. And I think that's always a concern for owners. They're concerned about the NHL season. I really believe that the NHL owners don't really want to go to the Olympics.
Remember,
I think
John Tavares?
Exactly. And I think it's more so that they are going to feel pressure from the players. So it's going to be interesting to see. I don't think this issue is over by any stretch of the imagination.
Especially with the NHL trying so hard now. They have this whole campaign to grow the game in China. They're sending players over there for hockey workshops. China has a KHL team now. It seems a little odd to pull back Olympic hockey in a country with so many people that you're trying to grow this game to. What a perfect way to showcase the game and get people hooked on than to have the best players from around the world playing right in your home rink. So to me, that's a little interesting. Korea is... it's a development, and we'll see. It's really interesting with the two different schedules. That, to me, that's leverage at its finest.
And, Sean, another aspect of this as well is, since the 2014 Olympics in Sochi, Russia, we now have Connor McDavid. We now have Jack Eichel. We now have Austin Matthews, Patrick Laine, right? Jesse Puljujarvi. There's so many more international young superstars in the game, right? Mm-hmm. It would be a shame, I think, not to see those guys compete at the Olympic level. But again, right now, it really is in the hands of the NHL and, I guess, to a lesser degree, the NHLPA. So I personally hope that the NHL still goes to the Olympics, but I'm with you. I'm still going to watch the Olympics, regardless if it's guys playing in Europe or maybe we see, you know, some players that are young professionals playing in the American Hockey League.
Would college players be allowed to play? Is that a style?
It's a not paid for a tournament, so I'd imagine it's... you know, provided that they're not playing. The problem is they'd be on during their season. So I don't know. But, it just becomes more Spengler Cup-ish, right? Mm-hmm. It becomes a little bit more of like an interesting, tournament from that perspective. But, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think that you guys are right. I think, you know, it's a leverage thing. And I think that we shall see what happens with in a year.
Dave. I really believe that there still is a chance that we'll see NHL players. Just right now, it's not looking too good after those general managers meetings in Boca Raton, where basically Gary Bettman said, hey guys, nothing's changed.
So you're saying there's a chance?
I think there is a chance. And I don't think anybody knows right now, to be honest with you. I think that's the big unknown in the hockey world. Are we going to see NHL players in South Korea, or are we going to have to wait till 2022? Because we know that the NHL is growing the World Cup. But I agree with you, Dave. It is going to be interesting to see if they go. Guys, we've got Pete Blackburn of Fox Sports coming up next, so we're going to take a break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.